Hi, this is Mimi Sheraton, author of 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die, and you are listening to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm Carrie Diamond, editorial director of Cherry Bomb, the indie magazine about women and food. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is brought to you by Knopf, publisher of food's most fabulous icons, from Julia Child to Lydia Bastianich, and home to new literary talents such as Sweet Bitter's Stephanie Dandler. Today is our Thanksgiving show, and despite this being a crazy year, we have a lot to be thankful for, especially the incredible women who inspire what we do here at Cherry Bomb. We're very lucky that we have two of those people here with us today. First up, Joy Wilson, who many of you know as Joy the Baker, the popular blogger and cookbook author, and the creator of the Instagram account Drake on Cake. Joy and I have been internet friends, I guess you could call it that, for a few years and had the pleasure of meeting earlier this year?
Yes, it was.
Earlier this year in New Orleans, where she relocated 3 years ago. We're thrilled she could join us today. Joy, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's so funny that you can add Drake on Cake to my accolades. That makes me laugh. Thank you.
And I finally stopped calling it Drake on Cakes. I think I was mixing up like Drake cakes,
those little snacks.
Totally different. So today is Thanksgiving, and we've declared today a Trump-free zone because I know we've been talking about it a lot, and we did our event, and a lot of people were a little stressed about today because they didn't know how they would talk to their friends and their family who they were celebrating with who might be on opposite sides of the political spectrum from them.
Sure.
So for those of you dealing with that today, we say good luck.
Have wine.
Exactly. Drink, load up on the desserts.
Yeah.
And you can always blame that the thing they say where turkey makes you sleepy because
tryptophan.
Of... Right, tryptophan.
And then I eat.
Blame the tryptophan. Say, gotta peace out and take a nap. So there's also football. I'm not a big football fan, but...
Right.
That's a great distractor.
A unifier sometimes, most of the time. If you're into football, right? You're into football.
Me?
No.
Oh, if you're into football, yes. I predicted, okay, this is really going out on a limb on Thanksgiving, but I once predicted to my boyfriend that I thought football would be banned in our lifetime. And he loves football, and he was like, you have no idea what you're talking about. That is the craziest statement you've ever said. I mean, now we see why football's questionable.
It could be considered questionable, but all of the dollar bills that go into the...
Well, that was his point. He said, I don't think you realize what a big business football is.
Never going anywhere.
But anyway, we're not here to talk about football or politics. We are here to talk about Joy the Baker, who we love, and I know all of you love her. And we're going to talk about food, because, hey, we're a food show, and it's Thanksgiving, and... It's the national food holiday.
Yeah, and we're hungry, actually.
And we're hungry, yes. You are doing Friendsgiving.
Yes, so I live in New Orleans now, and I have never had a Friendsgiving. I usually go back to my family's house for Thanksgiving in California, but I don't want to do that this year. I don't like traveling during the holidays. It's a beast. So I finally have enough friends in New Orleans to have a Friendsgiving, and it's going to be not super traditional. In New Orleans, the not food tradition is to go to the racetrack on Thanksgiving, and it's like the first day that the racetrack is open. I think that's
accurate. When you say racetrack, are we talking horses, greyhounds?
Yeah, horse racing.
Oh, wow.
So everyone goes to the racetrack and you dress up. So you wear a fancy dress.
Oh, I have no idea.
And
so it's like the
hat.
Kentucky Derby.
Yes. But it's Thanksgiving morning and everyone goes out. You bet on the horses. You have a Bloody Mary. You're wearing your fancy outfit. You yell for the horses for about 2 hours. And then you go home and have Thanksgiving. So that's what we're going to do.
Oh, fantastic. So how did you divide the chores? Who's cooking what?
Well, I am the base of our Thanksgiving is, but when I say I mean me and my cat. The base of our Thanksgiving is gumbo. So I'm making a andouille sausage and chicken thigh gumbo that I add crawfish to. And I've just been getting practice with making roux and making gumbo. And it's at, like, I can make a pretty good gumbo, which surprises me and delights me. So that is the base. I'm also making biscuits and my dad's sweet potato pie, which I brought you one of randomly. And I'm having people that are coming. There's about 8 people coming. Bring sides.
So no turkey.
Okay, well, recently got a text from a friend of a friend. I don't even know this friend. It'll be a new friend coming to Friendsgiving. It's a friend of a friend who is insisting on bringing a turkey. And I said, no, we don't really need a turkey. She's like, I need a turkey. I said, well, okay, do you? Please bring it cooked. Like, don't come to my home with a raw turkey.
That's pretty funny.
Then we'll be having Thanksgiving on Friday. So, yes, there will be a turkey. A new stranger friend is bringing a turkey.
Okay.
And if it were up to me, which it is, but, you know, bring a turkey if you want to. I wouldn't do a turkey. I don't really need turkey on Thanksgiving.
I think I'm one of those people who needs turkey on Thanksgiving.
Turkey. You would need to bring a turkey.
I don't eat turkey 364 other days of the year, but that one day.
Yeah.
I like a turkey.
I respect it. I think I just don't know how to cook them.
The best turkeys I've ever had on Thanksgiving were the ones that my boyfriend deep fries.
Oh, my word.
Those are fantastic.
Yes. I mean, surely.
I think I saw some pictures of, are people spatchcocking their turkeys this year? You know how, like, the spatchcocking of the chicken was a big thing? I feel like I saw maybe a Kenji Lopez photo somewhere of something that looked like a spatchcocked turkey.
That must be huge. What is the weight that you put on it?
I shouldn't have even brought this up because I have absolutely no information to back up what I'm saying. So I could have just made up spatchcock turkey. It might not be a thing.
Well, but I bet it is a thing. And I bet it's delicious.
Or now it could be. So what about, do you know what your friends are bringing as sides?
We're doing traditional sides, so macaroni and cheese, green beans. I just made a Brussels sprout dish from Martha Stewart's new vegetable cookbook that's essentially smoked Gouda bechamel that you put parboiled Brussels sprouts into and then you roast. So I am...
Oh, I'm dying over here.
Yeah,
that
I'm asking a
great
friend to make that. It's like macaroni and cheese, but with Brussels sprouts.
Ooh.
It's so good.
So, and we love Martha. We were just hanging out with Martha the other day, and she's the best.
She is. I've never met her, but I have seen her in life, and I describe it like seeing a lion in public.
It is like seeing a lion in public. I totally agree with that assessment. You know, it's interesting. She spoke at our Jubilee conference earlier this year, and it was really such an emotional, amazing conversation. If you missed it, you can catch it on, we recorded it for Radio Cherry Bomb. So if you go back and look, you'll find it. But she talked about how she had wished she'd had more children. And I thought that was so interesting and honest and emotional. But when you think about it, she has hundreds, maybe thousands of children. And I feel like you're one of them.
All of us.
All of us.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like we're kind of her children in a sense at Cherry Bomb. I mean, she really inspired what we do. The whole food blogger community, I mean, would that have even existed had Martha not done what she did?
I don't know. She has inspired me so much. Just her business lady brain and just the intention she puts into her work is really special and beautiful. And
we have to make sure you two meet at some point. We that would be fun.
Just let me know so I can wash my hands and do my hair.
Absolutely. I saw you were making something else from her vegetable cookbook. It was mashed sweet potatoes, mashed regular potatoes, some kind of onion yumminess. What was that?
So her vegetable book is great. It just came out this fall. And I'm just a fan.
Hashtag spawn.
I know. I'm like, no, it's
no, I was kidding.
I have this book and it's really comprehensive and fun. So she had a mashed sweet potato, mashed russet potatoes, layer them in a cast iron skillet. And then she did fried leeks on top, I think. But I was like, where there is a fried leek, why not let there be a straight onion ring? So I made a bunch of onion rings and put them on top of the mashed potatoes. And I feel like all you need is gravy.
Yum.
And they're perfect.
Well, if you're truly lazy, you can probably just dump some Funyuns on top and call it a day, right?
Funyuns or those like can of onion, like onion casserole
right,
things.
Right, the green bean casserole things.
Yeah. I don't know the last time I had a Funyun, but I'm not above it.
I haven't had one in a really long time. Let's talk desserts, because you are such a queen of cakes, pies, all of that. So what's the dessert situation for your Friendsgiving?
The dessert situation is, well, I'm asking one of the friends to bring a chocolate cake or a coconut cake. I want like a layered cake situation on the table somehow. But I am making what I make every year is my dad's sweet potato pie. And it's funny because on my blog this time of year, it's the most popular post no matter what I do, like, which is really cool because I think people are actually using it. So the recipe is on my site if you want to make a post-Thanksgiving sweet potato pie. But it's beautiful. It's not like a pumpkin pie. It's sweet potato, and the main spice in it is coriander. And
why coriander? That's not super traditional.
No, it's not traditional at all. Coriander, I think, usually is like a savory spice, but in this pie, it just really balances everything out. And it doesn't taste like coriander. You would never bite into the pie and think, like, who put coriander in this? But it just is a really lovely balance.
We have made that pie at Cherry Bomb.
Oh, you
and
have?
It is so good.
It's for your new book.
Yes, yes. Speaking of new books, let's talk about yours. It's not out for a little while, but people can get ready when they're plotting their spring cookbook purchases.
Yeah, I guess. I think you can order. So
can you pre-order?
I think you can.
Okay.
It's called Over Easy, and it's a brunch book. It's you can pre-order it on Amazon right now, but it's not out until March. And it's just loads of sweet and savory brunch recipes and lots of cocktails.
Yeah, when you told me you were doing a book, I just assumed it was another baking book. And when you said it was brunch, I was like, oh, that's a really cool twist on what you do and what you're known for. So brunch is a little controversial, though. You know, you've got that whole fuck brunch movement.
Who would say that?
Pardon my French. I don't know. People who complain about silly things.
People who are just upset about their lives.
I think guys... A lot of guys.
Well, you know,
they don't love the word brunch. Dave, you can weigh in. Our engineer Dave just gave us a look. I feel like there are certain words that guys hate, like fiance, brunch.
Wow.
Right?
That's true.
Commitment.
Let's move in together.
I don't mind the word brunch. I just mind paying $14 for eggs. That's all.
That's a good point. So, Joy, you are embracing brunch.
I am embracing brunch. And listen, I think I would probably say F brunch too if I had to stand in line for it for a long time and pay $14 for eggs that I wasn't super enthusiastic about. I don't stand in line for brunch. I think that's actually a crime. That's horrible. No one wants to do that on a Sunday morning. So the book is about how you can put together brunch for yourself and your friends in a way that feels doable and fun, and you don't have to stand in line, and you can still have a Bloody Mary.
Well, we are super excited for it. It's Joy the Baker's Over Easy. So if you're a Joy fan, go pre-order it on Amazon or tell your favorite bookstore that they absolutely need to carry it.
Please.
And we're really excited to see this come out. Did you shoot everything for it?
I worked with my photographer, John Melendez, and he does a lot of the photography for my site now, too.
Okay.
We work together a lot. And so, we shot it.
Okay. Let's talk about New Orleans, because everyone is so psyched about the food scene in New Orleans, which just gets better and better and better. What are you loving? Where are you eating these days?
New Orleans has some real sparkle magic when it comes to culinary cuisine. And it's people come for the gumbo and jambalaya and the red beans and crawfish, which is really exciting always. But the people that live there don't want that food all of the time. So there's this surge of really creative new foods for that city. So New Orleans is funny because what makes it so special is that it is similar to how it's always been. Like, it maintains its culture very well, even though all sorts of people have moved there. It really holds on to its architecture and its food culture, and that's what makes it what it is. But there is a lot of new life in New Orleans, and like, there's my favorite Chinese restaurant. It makes some really bizarre and cool Chinese food. It's called Red's Chinese.
Red's Chinese? I hadn't heard about that. Okay,
yeah,
very cool.
Like, it's down out of the way. There is an incredible bread baker in New Orleans. He doesn't even have a storefront. He's a wholesale baker. He bakes for a lot of restaurants in town. And his name is Grayson, and his bakery is Bellegarde Bakery. And what is so beautiful about him is that he has brought the first, like, stone mill to New Orleans.
Oh, wow.
He brought it from New England, and he has it in this small bakery space in mid-city, and he grinds his own flour and makes his own bread. And there's no other baker in New Orleans that's doing that. So there's a lot of that birthing itself in New Orleans, which feels really exciting.
Very cool. Why did you move to New Orleans?
I moved to New Orleans because, well, I moved from Venice, Los Angeles, California, which is just
where everybody else wants to move to.
Everyone else wants to. I know. And it's, I completely understand why people want to live there, because it is a special place. But I wanted a change. I grew up in Los Angeles. I like living in different parts of the country and seeing the perspective of a resident and not just a visitor. Mm-hmm. So I've lived in Vermont and Miami and Seattle. And now I live in New Orleans, and it's different to live there than it is to visit. And that's the part that I'm enjoying.
I mean, just speaking as someone who's visited, it is such a fascinating city. It's really, I think of all, I've been pretty fortunate to travel around the world. It's one of the most unique places on the planet.
I would agree.
It's easily the most unique city in America.
Definitely.
So if you're listening and you haven't been to New Orleans yet, you absolutely have to put it on your bucket list.
Come down.
And plan more time than you think you need, because there are so many cool things to see and places to eat, and just put your sneakers on and like walk all over the place. The architecture.
Yeah, it's so
alone
beautiful.
Is mind blowing.
Yeah.
We ate at this great restaurant. I think it was on the visit that I saw you, that I really haven't read that much about, but I loved it so much. Coquette.
Oh, yeah.
Have you been there?
I have been there.
What a terrific restaurant. I know nothing about the owners or the chefs or if women are involved, but
there are menu changes weekly, I believe, mm-hmm. and they can get pretty experimental in a town that is really traditional with its food. It's exciting to see how experimental they can get with things, and they have a nice bar program. It's a great restaurant, and it's a mix of tourists and neighborhood people.
Yeah. Okay, very cool. You also mentioned to me that you're doing a cookbook club.
Oh, yeah.
We're dying to do a Cherry Bomb cookbook club. Maybe we'll get that off the ground in 2017.
Please
but
do.
Tell us about yours.
So my cookbook club is, it's just starting. So this is my first round of cookbook club. But what it is I'm inviting 12 people over to my house, friends. It's starting with friends. I may open it up to other people, but I'm starting with friends. And I've given everyone the book that we're cooking from. We're all cooking from one book. This month we're doing All the Things I Want to Eat by Jessica Coslow. She is the chef owner of Squirrel in Los Angeles. And her book, it just came out this fall.
Such a cool book.
It is a really unique, beautiful book. Her food is beautiful, so her book is beautiful. So everyone gets a copy of the book, and I've bookmarked some recipes that I think would be fun to make. But people can make whatever they'd like. The idea is to get together with food, so it could be potluck style, or you could come over to my house and cook the recipe with everyone. And that style of like, come with ingredients or come with food half prepared, I got from Ellen Bennett of Headley and Bennett's Aprons.
I saw you guys on Instagram.
Yes.
I was very jealous. I love Ellen.
Yeah, she's an inspiration.
She's a life force.
She is a powerful, powerful person. She does a Bennett brunches where everyone comes with ingredients and we cook in the kitchen together, and it's absolute madness, but it comes together.
We should say Ellen is the founder of Headley and Bennett, the apron company, for those who don't know Ellen. But so that's a lot of fun. So do people have to buy the book, or they?
I'm starting by gifting the book to everyone.
You are a nice friend.
Well, I called the publishers.
You could get away with that. You are Joy the Baker.
I called the publishers and told them what I was doing and asked nicely. And they sent some books to me, which is, I mean, not super accessible to everyone, but, you know, I don't know. Well, no harm in asking.
You know what? You're using your power in a good way.
Power's for good.
Speaking of being a powerful blogger, how's the blogging community these days? Is blogger even a word you want to hear anymore?
I don't know. I used to feel self-conscious about it, but I don't anymore. I don't really have an attachment to that title in a way that feels negative. How's the blogging community? I think they're doing all right. I don't know. I don't think people read blogs anymore.
It's tough. We've talked about that a tiny bit just with social media being so pervasive.
Yeah.
That if you're a blogger and you depend on people coming to your blog, but all anybody wants to look at anymore is Instagram.
Right.
Or whatever. How do you react to that as a blogger?
Well, I think it's important to pay attention to where people are, and people aren't using the internet like they did even 3 years ago. In my sphere, I notice that people are on Instagram and they're on Snapchat, and that's mostly where they are. And so it's my job to find my place in that. And I don't think that my place is on Snapchat, just because it just does not seem super fun to me. Mm-hmm. So I think I am connecting more with people on Instagram, and people still come to my blog because it is a resource for recipes. But I don't know, the internet is always changing. So it's exciting, but you have to it's like balancing on a rolling log.
Life is like balancing on a rolling log right now.
Big log roll.
Oh my gosh. I have to write a speech for the the December graduation at my college.
What college?
I'm giving a talk, SUNY Plattsburgh.
Where is that?
It's on the border of New York State and Canada.
Oh.
It's sort of a straight line up from New York City. Okay. And I went to college there 100 years ago. And they're giving me an honorary doctorate.
That's amazing. Congratulations.
My family can't believe it. They think it's the funniest thing they've ever heard. But so I have to speak to the students, and I'm what the hell am I going to say? Life is just so crazy.
Tell them
now.
About the log rolls.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, in ways it wasn't when I was a college student.
Yeah.
I mean, life's always confusing and hard and beautiful and mysterious, but today it's just a whole different thing.
It is. I think that we've moved very quickly in the last 5 years, 7 years, mm-hmm. into the realm we're in now. But it feels like it went really fast. There's a lot to keep up with. And it's not to say that you have to keep up with everything, but you do have to find if you're an entrepreneur, you have to find a space that feels authentic in a lot of different places. And that...
But I think everybody has to be entrepreneurial in a sense today, because the workforce is so unpredictable.
That's true.
In a way. You know, you really, I hate to say it, but you can't count on jobs the way you used to be able to count on jobs.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, just a few years ago. Well, let's end this on a super positive note. I would love to know what you're most thankful for.
What I'm most thankful for? That is a great question. So much. I think I'm most thankful for the way I've been able to use my creativity to shape a life that feels really amazing and more than I could have dreamed. And it's not look what all I did, but I'm here in New York and I get to do this. I am just thankful for agency.
That's a beautiful answer. We are going to move to our speed round.
Okay.
Now, close things out. I added one Thanksgiving question. What are your feelings about cranberries?
I love cranberries.
Oh, good. I read some story that said millennials hate cranberries, and I
Who
was
cares?
Like...
Wait, listen. When can I stop caring about what millennials think? I'm so tired of reading articles about this is what millennials feel like about grocery shopping. I don't care. Okay, sorry.
But you're pro-cranberry. We've established
yes.
that. Okay, coffee or tea?
I like both.
How do you take both?
Black coffee, tea with cream and sugar.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
Really?
I know. Give me a bag of potato chips, you'll never see it again.
What's in your fridge?
An old Drake on cake.
That sounds so appetizing.
That's really what's in there.
What kitchen tool do you use the most?
I use a bench scraper the most.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Oh, gosh. It's so terrible that I thought of all the ones I wouldn't want to be trapped with first. I would say some bread baker. I'd want a bread baker on the island with me.
Are there any food celebrities who are bread bakers? You're avoiding the answer. You gotta name a name.
Tara Jensen. She's not a food celebrity, but she makes bread in outside of Asheville. She might be a food celebrity. She was in Bon Appetit. Do you know her?
I don't, but now I want to know her.
She has Smoke Signals Bakery. And
oh,
she,
I do know her. Yes, okay, absolutely.
She's a celebrity.
She sounds like a good one to be stuck on the island with. What are you reading right now?
Right now, I'm reading a book called Just Mercy by Brian Stevenson. Did I get that? You told me to get the book out and memorize the author name, and I think I got it right.
What's the book about?
It's from the perspective written by the guy who started the Equal Justice Initiative, and it's about death penalty cases in the South, because in the 80s and 90s, and maybe some even today, it's really harsh down there. And you kind of have to fight for equal justice for people that are in the prison system. So just some light reading.
Where would you like to travel to next?
I would like to go to Paris. I've never been to Paris.
What?
I know, it's criminal.
Wow, you've never been to Paris. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
We really want to do a Paris issue one of these days, and that would be a great story. Joy the Baker goes to Paris. Just anyone's listening, Air France or whatever.
Wide eyes.
Let's make this happen. Yeah. Joy, thank you. This went so fast.
Thank you, Carrie.
And it's always a delight. It's only the second time I've ever gotten to see you in person.
Oh, it feels like it doesn't feel that way at all.
No, but it's always fun seeing you, talking to you and whatnot. So thank you for stopping by, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
We're going to break for a word from our sponsor, Knopf, and then we'll be right back with Chef Nancy Silverton. Imagine the culinary world without the influence of Julia Child, Marcella Hazan, Edna Lewis, Maher Joffrey, Lydia Bastianich, and Judith Jones. It's impossible. We have the iconic publishing house Knopf to thank for bringing the writings and the recipes of these women to life. Knopf's great tradition of supporting new voices continues today with Smitten Kitchen's Deb Perlman, Sweet Bitter's Stephanie Dandler, and Butter Baked Good's Rosie Dakin. Check out Knopf's great collection of fiction, nonfiction, and cookbooks at your favorite bookstore. Keep reading and keep cooking with Knopf. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the second half of Radio Cherry Bomb. We have a real treat for you this Thanksgiving. We are here with Chef Nancy Silverton. Nancy, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful being here.
This is Nancy's, not her first time on the show or on Heritage Radio, but it is your first time here in the studio.
Yeah.
We're really honored you made the trek out to Brooklyn, so thank you very much. What brings you to New York?
Well, my book tour. How about that? So I am, my ninth book just came out. It's called Mozza at Home. And I'm in Manhattan, well, now in Brooklyn, getting everyone that I possibly can to buy the book and cook from the book.
The book is so wonderful. We'll get to that in a minute. But tell us about Mozza. It has become this empire. And Mozza Osteria is probably one of my favorite restaurants, if not the my absolute favorite in Los Angeles. So tell us about the restaurant group.
So in Los Angeles, I have three restaurants on the corner of Melrose and Highland. I have Osteria Mozza, Pizzeria Mozza, and Key Spaca. I have a pizzeria down in Orange County, and then a pizzeria and an osteria in Singapore. But in Los Angeles, where that empire you are talking about is, my headquarters. The three restaurants are all very different from each other, but they're all Italian. One pizza, one pasta, and another lots and lots of great meats.
I was so impressed because when I was at Osteria, you were there. You were there working the line with everybody else. And I think a lot of people are always surprised to discover that you're still on the schedule. You work the line.
That surprises me because I am a chef. I am a restaurant owner. And so where should I be when I'm not promoting my book? I should be at my restaurant, cooking at my restaurant.
I think people assume when you become a big shot chef, you know, like we think you are, that it's a surprise to see you actually doing the hard work.
No, there's lots of us still behind the stove, although, you know, I'm not behind the stove. And for those of you that haven't been to Osteria Mozza, I am in the middle of the dining room behind a beautiful marble bar doing all sorts of dishes using mozzarella.
It's such a beautiful restaurant.
And I love it because it's timeless. You know, it's just very, very classic.
The layout's great. You have those two bars. You have the one bar where I saw you, and then you have a bar.
Right, which we call the Amaro bar because we offer many different varieties of Amaro.
Tell us about Amaro a little bit for those who don't know what that is.
Well, first of all, I don't drink it. How about that? let's start with that. But I'm a red wine drinker, in case you want to know what to bring me.
Ditto. That's why I'm asking you to describe Amaro, because I'm not quite the expert either.
But, you know, it's a digestif. Amaro's made to be drunk at the end of the meal, kind of have everything settle. It's very herbaceous. Some of the ones are a little bit more palatable than some of the ones that are very strong and aggressive. But there's a lot of people that are drinking Amaro these days. And I know that my partner, Joe Bastianich, loves Amaro. And it was sort of his decision to make that the focal part of our bar.
That's great. So let's jump to the cookbook. The cookbook is fantastic. One little fact, your co-author, Carolyn
yes.
Carreño, she and I shared a bedroom at a beach house a decade ago. We had a summer share in Sagaponack.
Wow.
And I think Carolyn and I were the only two single girls in the house. So we got to share the room with the twin beds. And I got to know her and her dog, Rufus.
Yes.
Is Rufus still around?
Yep.
I hope
Rufus is still around.
Good. I got to know them well. And we had a really fun summer. And I wasn't in the food world back then. And Carolyn was and, you know, would tell us all these stories. And so I was really thrilled to see that you've worked on a few books with her now.
Yeah, this is my third, and she just finished her own book.
I know.
And it's going to be on Grain Bowls, so
it's coming
I'm
out in the spring, right?
Uh-huh.
Yes, we're really excited about that. How does your relationship work? Who does what for the books?
She does all the work, and I take all the glory. No, I do the fun part, and the fun part is that I get to come up with the recipes. And she does the tedious part, which is writing all the instructions, which actually do come from me, but she just has to make them all work. And that, if I had to say, what is the least fun part of writing a cookbook, it is writing out those directions, you know? And
it's
I
hard.
Really, yeah, you know, because I write a book because I want people to cook when I'm teaching them, right? But what they make, I want to work. And so I feel that you really have to be very thorough and instructive in writing a recipe. And it's really tedious to do it, let me tell you. So she does that. And then we do the head notes together.
Well, you make a great team because I absolutely love this cookbook. I mean, you know, like so many of our listeners do, there are so many cookbooks out there right now. But this really is one everybody should pick up for multiple reasons. First off, I mean, you're a treasure in the food world. You know so much. You know so many people. Your knowledge really, really comes through in the head notes. It's a fun cookbook to actually sit down and read. And then I love how you've broken up the cookbook. It's in menus.
Right. But menus different than traditional menu cookbooks where the menu is meant to be cooked, meaning the entire menu. So it'll be, you know, a four-course meal that you're planning and you're making everything. This is broken up to menus, but it's full of all sorts of side dishes that would all taste good together, whether you choose to make one of them or you choose to make all 16.
It's so wonderful, and it feels really fresh, which is hard to do with a cookbook. You feel like everything's been done in a cookbook, and then you flip through yours, and it's so helpful the way you've broken it up with just the mains and sides and sauces and different things. And it's in a way that doesn't make you feel overwhelmed, which is fantastic.
That's good to hear. You know, I knew that was the biggest challenge, is to figure out how are we going to break this up, meaning that what I wanted to do is I wanted to do a cookbook that gave choices for someone that was entertaining or cooking, certainly for their family, but let's just say entertaining. And I wanted to give them all sorts of choices where they could make food that was room temperature. It wasn't temperature sensitive. So they, too, could enjoy the party, right? But I didn't know that I was going to end up arranging it so all the dishes in that chapter went together. That just sort of happened, which was great for me because I have always told people how much I hate potluck dinners. I always hate them because what happens is that inevitably somebody brings the weird dish that runs into the other weird dish, and then you have two weird dishes, right? But using the chapters, as I've suggested, and the food in those specific chapters, no matter where you put them on your plate, no matter how high you piled them up, they would all taste good together. And I think that that's really helpful, and I think it's something that people don't think about.
So the next cookbook won't be a potluck, guide to Nancy Silverton's potluck.
But you could use this as a potluck guide. You, for instance, could say, I'm going to have a potluck, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to send everybody that I'm inviting to my potluck a copy of this book, and we'll choose a chapter, and we'll assign the dishes, and we'll have a perfect meal.
You know who you have to get in touch with. The guest before you was Joy the Baker. Joy Wilson, she's a wonderful blogger and cookbook author, and she just started a cookbook club, and she did exactly that. She gave a copy of Jessica from Squirrel's new cookbook to all the members of the cookbook club, so I should suggest to her that she, the next meeting of the cookbook club, they cook from your cookbook. So a few fun things I noticed in the cookbook. You talk about your mom in the cookbook and how she was a working mother and she was a television writer.
Yep.
Tell us
General Hospital.
No.
Yeah.
And Luke and Laura?
Yeah, all that. And you know, I have to say, and I'm going to say that on radio, right, is the one regret, the one thing I'm not thankful of, is that I was always too busy ever to go down to the set. Realistically speaking, I was not interested in watching General Hospital, but I think that it always bothered my mom. So if I could do it all over again, I would have gone down and seen her on the set. But yeah, she was a head writer for General Hospital.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Did you watch General Hospital?
Never.
Or was it too close to home? Yeah.
No, I just never watched TV, and I never was a soap opera person.
Oh my gosh. When I was, I don't even know why my mom let us watch soap operas, but I think it was when I was in grammar school and we would run home so we could watch Luke and Laura at 3 o'clock. And that was I guess it was the end of the 70s or the early 80s. That was, General Hospital was such a big thing. And so, I mean, now, I don't even know if soap operas exist now. I guess it's reality.
We live in a soap opera. How about that?
I guess it's all reality television.
Yeah.
How did that impact you, though, having a working mom?
You know, the way it impacted me was that I grew up in the 50s. I was born in 1954, so 50s, 60s, right? And most of my friends' parents, or most of the mothers of my friends, didn't work. And that was sort of the era. But coming from a home where, even though my mother did work from home, it was never a choice. I knew that I was going to grow up and I was going to get a job. And I think that that was really influential. And I came from very powerful women. So,
did you have to cook for yourself a lot?
No.
No.
And I didn't cook for myself a lot. The one thing that I did make quite often was fried bologna, but that was about it. No, my mother cooked every single night. We had dinner at home and we sat around the table, my sister and my father and my mother and I. We each had our places, and we did something that's just not done anymore, is that we ate together and talked together, and that was a really special time.
And you referenced that in the dedication. You have to my parents, Doris and Larry, thank you for our nightly family table, the most beautiful experience a child can ever have. That's really lovely. So family dinner every night?
Every night.
And do you remember what your mom cooked?
I remember, you know, I didn't like her cooking. In fact, I hated her cooking. Because my mother was a very unusual cook. Not only growing up in the unusual time of sitting around having family dinners, I also grew up at the peak of convenience food. So I would have been much happier if my mother rewarmed a Swanson TV dinner where my food was nothing touched, which I really liked, and I liked all the little items at each of the compartments. But she was an unusual cook of the time because she was not interested in making food of that moment. Food of that moment to me was like tuna tetrazzini and cream tuna on toast and things like that that my neighbors were all eating, and I just drooled. But my mother was buying small little cookbooks and making beef bourguignon and making Julia Child's roast chicken, and it was just way too exotic for me, so I didn't appreciate her cooking.
So how did you wind up becoming a chef?
It's all about a boy, isn't it? So when I moved up to college, and it was the first year of the dorms at the college I went to Sonoma State, and there was a vegetarian cooking program there where the cutest boy I had ever seen was cooking, and so I went up to him and I told him I loved to cook, and that I was a vegetarian, and could I work in the dorm kitchen?
You totally lied.
Yeah, and the rest is history.
That's so funny. Some other nuggets from the cookbook. You are one of celery's biggest champions.
Underrated. Celery and cucumber. Although they're making their comeback, and I'm happy to see. But I love celery. I love its crunchiness. I love to braise it. I love it raw. I love it in salads. Yeah, celery and cucumbers.
So maybe you can do for celery what you wrote that Jonathan Waxman did for Brussels sprouts.
Uh-huh.
I saw that we love Jonathan Waxman and we're big fans of
his with him last night.
Barbudo restaurant. Mm-hmm. And you said that he's the one who sort of rehabilitated Brussels sprouts' reputation.
I think he rehabilitated raw Brussels sprouts, and I have a shaved raw Brussels sprout salad in my book too. But the other thing he did for the good or the bad is he also, I think, put shredded kale on the menu, and he has a terrific kale salad.
So we have him to thank for Brussels sprouts and kale.
Yes.
Wow. I don't know that everybody knows that.
For him being my first chef that I worked for. So mm-hmm.
Where was that?
At Michael's restaurant in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm. I think I knew that. So, okay. What else did I learn from this cookbook? Some of the things I really loved. So simple. Avocado salsa. Well, I mean, that makes all the sense in the world.
And it's delicious. You have the two combined. But what I love, what the avocado does, is it gives body to the salsa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just not as runny. But you still have that beautiful green, because you have the tomatillo and the avocado. You have a beautiful green sauce, but with a little bit of body.
And you pair it with that wonderful roasted pork shoulder.
Yeah.
It was very hard reading through this cookbook and not having eaten breakfast. Another thing, I don't know, I never thought of this because I'm not a chef, but the oven-roasted grapes on the vine.
Yeah.
That's amazing. How did you come up with that?
You know, I came up with it in Italy. I was looking for a condiment to go with some fresh sheep's milk ricotta I had just purchased. And I had grapes, and they could have easily gone together. But I just felt like I wanted to do something, either the cheese or the grapes. Something had to go in the oven, and the grapes won.
You, speaking of Italy, you've had a really long-running love affair with that country.
Long.
And now you own a home there. We look in jealousy at your Instagram pictures from your trips to Italy.
Yeah, I have a little home in Umbria, and I'll be going there this Christmas. I go in the summer for 6 weeks, Christmas 2 weeks, and I get to cook and cook and cook, and I love it.
It sounds fabulous. And tying back to sort of the theme of the book, you entertain a lot when you're in Italy in your home, and it sounds like your friends started going there and they started buying homes, and you've got this whole sort of second community.
Right, which is wonderful to have. Bad in the sense that I still don't speak Italian because I have too many Americans that I can talk to, but one day. But yeah, so it is a beautiful little hilltop town, and in the summer I throw at least 4 gigantic parties, and then using leftovers, a few smaller ones after that. But it's so enjoyable because, first of all, the weather is so beautiful. I'm in the country. The produce is fantastic. and I have nothing on my mind except for cooking something delicious. And that, you know, is rare. You know, running these restaurants is not always necessarily smooth sailing, right? And so this time when I'm away, I'm so far away, I can't do anything about the daily problems. And so my head is clear and my heart is big, and I just sort of cook my way through the days.
That's wonderful. Tell us more about the produce, because I know when I go to Los Angeles, I am practically weeping when I go to that Santa Monica farmers market.
Yeah.
Especially in the winter compared to New York. So the fact that you're impressed by the produce over in Italy, it must be truly gorgeous.
Well, it's not just, you know, the produce. There is something about the terroir there. So, for instance, you could never make a basil in Los Angeles that tastes as good as the basil is in Italy, right? I mean, it just doesn't. And you understand why basil came, well, you know, why it came from, why it comes from Italy, right? Why it's used so often there, you know, especially in Liguria. I have to say, being in Genoa and having the pesto there is still like nowhere else. But second to that, being in Umbria and clipping the basil out of your garden and making a pesto. Ugh. I mean, you can just smell it from miles away.
I'm dying. You talk about an Italian chickpea puree in the cookbook, and I wasn't really that familiar with their tradition of chickpea purees. You say it's not made with tahini. How is it similar to a hummus?
Well, it's similar. It is. First of all, in Umbria grows a lot of chickpea. They're very tiny. So when eating around at the restaurants there, you'll always see chechi on the menu there. But the only way it's really different than hummus is that there isn't tahini in it. So it's still made with garbanzo beans that are cooked until they're very soft and pureed. The one from this restaurant in my town that I love so much is probably half chickpea, half extra virgin olive oil, and that's probably what makes it taste so good.
So since it's Thanksgiving, tell us what you're up to for Thanksgiving.
Well, I am, this is my bragging rights, I get to go to my dear friend Ruth Reichel's house for Thanksgiving, where she, this Thanksgiving is her favorite holiday, and she apparently cooks an incredible Thanksgiving spread. And every year she invites me to her country house. And every year I say next year. And this year, I'm going.
Oh, please take a lot of pictures and put them on Instagram.
Okay.
We would love to see those. And say hi to Ruth for us. We absolutely love her. So what are you thankful for this year? I know it's not the November we expected,
but there's still a lot started. I guess, you know, maybe I'm thankful. How about this? I was trying to think about what I would be thankful for, besides my kids and, you know, and all that, which I'm always so thankful for. But I guess, and my son Oliver, who just met me here this morning, actually corrected me when I sort of threw my hands up and I said, I don't read the paper anymore. I don't watch TV. And he said, don't give up. Don't forget about me. And so I think I'm thankful for his generation that they're angry too, right? But they're not going to not just walk away from it, you know? And I think that that's what I'm thankful for, are people of his generation that are going to help people in my generation.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to talk about something way more frivolous, is your style. When I told the team I was headed over here to interview you, Donna, our editorial assistant, said, oh, please take a picture of Nancy. I want to see what she's wearing. You really are the most stylish woman in the food world, and hands down the most stylish chef that exists out there. How did your interest in fashion begin?
You know, it began slowly. I know that when I first started cooking, when I first started restaurant cooking, and so I'm thinking about my days, early days in Michael's in 1979, which was a couple of years, I didn't have the money to really sort of be stylish, right? So I don't think I was that stylish then. And then I moved up into Spago, where I had my first child right away within that year. And every new mother knows they don't really have the time to be stylish.
Let alone take a shower.
Yeah, exactly. And 2 years after that, my my second child was born, and I had even less time and less money to be stylish. But I knew that there was a few restaurateurs out there, Barbara Lazaroff being one of them, who I was always very close to and always was so jealous of her wardrobe that I think I must have put it somewhere in the back of my mind that one day I'm going to grow up and I'm going to be Barbara Lazaroff. Maybe that's it. But I just know that I feel better and I cook better when I'm comfortable in what I am wearing. So I think there is a connection between making beautiful food and being able to purchase beautiful accessories, clothing, right?
And you cook in designer clothing.
I do, because remember, I have gone out of the kitchen and I'm behind that bar, so there's no flames, no heat, so I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can throw an apron on.
You seem very fond of Italian designers.
Italian and Japanese are my favorite.
So tell us some of your favorites.
Well, like right now I'm wearing a Comme des Garçons, so that's Japanese. I love Issey Miyake. I love Marnie.
That you walked in the most beautiful jacket. I'm not even going to do it justice. It looks like some kind of painting come to life. And I did tell Nancy that we'd all be really happy to get her her hand-me-downs. So maybe one day you can have a giant garage sale and we'll all come and visit and buy your hand-me-downs from you. You also have fabulous shoes on today. So you've got this wonderful black coat dress.
And this, you have to point out this.
Because is that
this
a pin or is that part of the dress?
It's a pin. There's a jewelry maker, actually in New York, upstate somewhere. His name is John Iverson, and he does castings, among other things, he does castings of leaves. So every single one is different.
So beautiful. We'll take a picture so as not to make everybody mental because we're talking about this and you can't see anything. You also have on fantastic shoes. Tell us these and white sort of Mary Jane Oxford type things.
They are also Comme des Garçons. I'm very lucky that in Los Angeles I can either go to Marnie, of course, but I have a very dear friend who has a store called Noodle Stories in Los Angeles on 3rd Street. And all you have to do is walk in there, and when you leave, you know that you will look perfect.
It's called
Noodle Stories.
Noodle Stories. Uh-huh. Okay, great. We'll have to check it out next time
we're in
Los Angeles. I think we'll go shop there, and then we'll go eat at one of your places. That sounds like a dreamy day. So we're running out of time, sadly, so we're going to do the speed round with you. Coffee or tea?
Coffee. I hate tea.
You hate tea?
Hate it.
Wow.
And you can tell the way I said it.
Why do you hate tea?
I don't know. I just have never liked the flavor of tea.
Okay.
But I coffee, you know, interestingly enough, I can't drink coffee without milk in it. Both for the color, I like sort of that muted color, but also the flavor. And I am definitely a cappuccino drinker. So
we should send you a copy of the story we did once. You know, Calvin Klein used to give his personal chef a Pantone of how he liked his coffee with milk.
Oh,
it had
yeah.
It had to be the exact color.
That's how I drink it. That's funny.
Sweet or salty?
Salty.
What is in your fridge right now?
I only have a mini bar at the Ace Hotel. That refrigerator, let's see, there's water, beer, and some. But in my refrigerator, and again, my son who's out there, if I lie and tell you that there's something in there, he's going to tell me, you know, he's going to not believe me anymore. So I really have nothing in my refrigerator but condiments on the side of the refrigerator.
Are they old condiments?
Some of them are, and I try to weed them out, but mostly they're gifts of different kinds of, you know, spicy condiments, things like that. But, you know, I don't eat at home, and I don't like wasting food, and so I have a very clean refrigerator.
What kitchen tool do you use the most?
Besides a knife, you're going to probably say, right?
No, you could say a knife.
Well, a knife, definitely. But besides that, you know, I am a cook that does not like to cook with anything that really plugs in. So I have mortar and pestles. I have wooden spoons. I have heat-proof spatulas. I have large serving spoons. But that's really about what I have. And I love wood. I love wooden utensils.
If you were trapped on a desert island with one food celebrity, who would it be?
Wow. Do I really have to say that?
Yes.
How about Ruth Reichel? There you go.
That's a great answer. What are you reading right now?
I am reading a book by Marissa Silver, and it's called Little Nothing. And it's written so well. She's such a great novelist. But this book is so crazy. To break it down, I would tell you it's about a little girl that was born a dwarf. Her parents tried to have her stretched and did some hocus pocus, and she became a wolf, and somebody fell in love with her. So it's about a guy looking for the love of this wolf, right? I mean, it's just, but it's written so well. Anyway,
wow.
I highly recommend it.
Where would you like to travel to next?
You know, I got to say, Italy is always where I want to be.
And back to Thanksgiving, are you bringing anything? I know you're not a fan of potluck, but are you bringing anything to Ruth's for Thanksgiving?
I'm sleeping over there, and I know she doesn't need anything for the meal. So I'm going to bring her something that she's always told me that she loves, and it's at Bread Bakery. She loves their babka, but I think their poppy seed Danish is fantastic too. So tomorrow I'm going to go wait in probably a long line and bring her those two items.
That sounds great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I mean, you know how much we love you here at Cherry Bomb and look up to you for so many, your style, your food, just your leadership in the industry. So we have to say thank you and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you, and you too.
Give Ruth our best. And also make sure you go get Nancy's book, Mozza at Home. It's really wonderful. Buy it for yourself, buy it for holiday gifts. Just go buy it. That's it for today's show. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and much love to Knopf for supporting this season of Radio Cherry Bomb and for publishing such beautiful books like the works of Julia Child. Don't forget to support Heritage Radio, the not-for-profit home of Radio Cherry Bomb. To make a donation, visit heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you for listening, everyone. You're the bomb.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Liuzzi, and I'm the host of Tech Bites on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm also a martial artist and the occasional contributor to Cherry Bomb magazine. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb magazine and Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Aaron Fairbanks, the creator of Ladies Night. Have you heard about it? If you haven't, go to AaronMarieFairbanks.com and check out the next event.